It's a joy to be with the people of God this morning. Thank you for your presence here. I invite you to open your Bibles, if you have them, to Nehemiah. I've been preaching some sermons from the book of Nehemiah, and I go there again this morning after a bit of a break. But the last sermon I preached, I introduced an individual, or actually three individuals, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, who Nehemiah calls the adversaries. When God's work is advancing, we can be sure that there will be opposition. And I talked about Sanballat in a way, I use him as an example of the adversary, our adversary, the devil. And I looked at seven encounters throughout the book of Nehemiah where Nehemiah and the people encountered and faced this opposition. And I looked at different ways in which Sanballat and his cronies came to Nehemiah and tried to stop the building of what God was doing. And I made some comparisons to ways in which our adversary comes to us sometimes. And I ended with quoting Ephesians 6, that beautiful passage that Paul gives us, Ephesians 6, 10 to 18, where we have the armor that God gives us. I really appreciated that last song that men sang. That was by request from me. However, I didn't request two other songs along the same theme that were sung this morning. Stand up for Jesus, ye soldiers of the cross, and Onward, Christian Soldiers. So thank you for choosing those songs and singing them. My theme this morning, I've titled the message, Building with a Trowel and a Sword, and I'll explain that title. But I want to see how Nehemiah equipped his people, the people, to do just that. So I believe we'll read. I'm going to read more extensively than I do sometimes. In Nehemiah 4, I will be reading, and I will have you stay seated for some of the reading, and then I will ask you to stand at a certain point. I'm going to begin reading at verse 6. And read through verse 23 of Nehemiah 4. So we built the wall. The entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Now it happened, when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, they became very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. Then Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall." And our adversaries said, "They will neither know or see anything until we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease." And so it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came that they told us 10 times, "For from whatever place you turn, they will be upon us." Therefore I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." And this is the point where you may stand. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us, and that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, and wore armor, and the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction, and with the other they held a and with the other held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. Then I said to the nobles, the rulers, and the rest of the people, "The work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us." So we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from the daybreak until the stars appeared. And at the same time, I also said to the people, "Let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day." So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. You may sit down. I said I looked at the seven encounters of Sanballat and the people of God. And this was one in particular that I didn't spend a lot of time on in the last message, and I thought I would spend more time on today, because here's a lesson that we can visualize. We can see, we have a really good example of how that we are to face the enemy and to overcome him. Building with trowel and sword. So there was a conspiracy, and there was the real threat of an ambush. The builders that were working on the wall, they were ill-equipped to do battle. There was a real threat. We will kill them. The work will stop. You know, the adversaries for 100 years weren't concerned about them. The people had lived among the rubble for 100 years. There was no threat of war. But when the walls began to take shape, then the enemy started taking notice. And that is so true today. When people are distracted, when they're not caring, when they're not working for God, when people are in the grip of his control, the devil doesn't spend a lot of time and energy attacking them. But when there's a possibility for change, where the glory of God will be revealed and where there is going to be something built that will bring glory to God, the devil takes notice. And I believe as Christians, we know this intuitively. We talk about this from time to time. But it still is surprising. It is for me, at least, when it comes and the way it comes. When we are busy in the Lord's work and we face something that we sense is an attack, it's a real thing. And I remember that being so vivid at my first ordination, for a minister. I don't know if anyone else in the room that night realized it, but there was a real spiritual battle going on that night. While the preachers were preaching the sermon, I was sitting there and I was engaged in a real spiritual battle. It probably didn't help that we had a rented facility, and it was one of those where it was dark. The ceiling was painted black. I think there was some black on the stage as well. And it just felt like the darkness, the black was closing in. And I remembered that was a real battle, and I'm thankful that was overcome with the power of Christ. But it was real, and it was surprising, but it was there. So Nehemiah did several things. In verse 13, we read how he placed guards in strategic places around the wall. This was something new. This is something that they hadn't done before. But he armed them with weapons, and especially they were there to watch out for their families and their own people while they were working. And then in verse 17, they were instructed to keep weapons on them and even in their hands. There were laborers that were carrying burdens, or maybe they were carrying buckets of cement and handfuls of rock, but they needed to do that with one hand so that they could have their sword at the ready, their weapon at the ready in their other hand. And then in verse 18, those who needed to use both hands for the work, maybe it was the masons on the wall who needed to use both of their hands, They were to be girded with swords on their sides so that they would be ready at a moment's notice to use them. In verse 22, the builders and their servants were instructed to stay close to the site, to the building site, at night. So they were builders by day and guards by night. And then back to verse 16, Nehemiah told his own personal servants that he wants to divide them into two groups. So half of them worked with building tools, while the other half were armed with weaponry like spears and bows, and they held shields and they wore coats of armor. And now we're making a New Testament application today, and I need to clarify that we're taking an Old Testament story and we're making a spiritual application. We do not use a literal or even a symbolic sword to defend ourselves or to advance the church of Jesus Christ. We have the sword of the Spirit, and we're not advancing our own work. We are defending the gospel. I need some help today to illustrate this, and I've talked to one of my helpers already, and the other one I haven't talked to yet, but you'll find out soon enough. Grant, I need your help. So you can just stand up here. Grant, you can just come up here on the platform if you'd like. Stand so people can see you. We have a wall to build, Grant, and I hear that you're a builder. So would you like to have a tool? Hold this. You know what that is? Trowel, right? Okay. But Grant's been working on the wall. Now we come to this crisis moment where there is a threat against the building. The people of God have been threatened with an ambush, and what shall take place now? Well, we have another builder. He's been working for a while. His name is Joshua. Would you come forward, Joshua? I don't have a trowel for you, but we can just imagine that Joshua has been working with a trowel, but now I'm going to give you something else, Joshua. Can you handle this? Okay. Now, maybe, let's do it this way. Why don't you stand? You're working on the wall there, right? You stand over here, Joshua. You stand. There you go. Okay. You can pretend you're working, boys. I don't know, or Grant, at least. Watch that sword there, Joshua, okay? A few questions I have for you now. Are these young men on the same team? They are. They're not enemies. They're teammates. I gave Grant the trowel first, and Joshua had been handling a trowel earlier, but now he has a sword because he needs it. So which of these two roles, which of these two responsibilities is the most important? The trowel man or the sword man? Okay, both. Okay, very good. What is the swordman, Joshua, doing for the trowel handler, the trowel man? He's protecting him. Grant is not going to be able to work, do his job, unless he's under protection. And so he's being protected by the man who has the sword. Now, maybe a little bit more of a thoughtful question is, what is the trowel handler, what is he doing for the good of the swordman?
He's building a strategic long-term defense.
Yes. Very good. That's a good answer. So what would happen if the decision would have been made for me to hand Joshua a trowel instead of a sword, and we just keep on building without using the sword?
Well,
Mm-hmm. The work would stop, could very potentially stop. The workers could be killed. I believe that threat was a real one. What would happen if the man who has the trowel would decide that he would rather have a sword and he would go find a sword and use it instead and join his friend over here that has the sword? The wall wouldn't get built. Okay. Thank you, boys. I really appreciate your willingness to come up here and be such good examples to us. Building with a trowel and sword. As we build, it's important that we use the correct weapons. A trowel is not a sword, and a sword is not a trowel. I think sometimes people mistakenly use the wrong tool for the job. And, you know, I suppose you could use this as a weapon, but it wouldn't be a very effective one. And you could probably lay stones and move mortar with this, but it wouldn't work very well. Building with a trowel and sword. Some of my thoughts this morning center on this idea that I believe that we are called to be builders or trowel users first. But then we're also called to be sword handlers or defenders. But that comes secondary. And the reason I think this way is I've quoted this verse before in this series where Jesus said in Matthew 16:18, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So there's a building and there's a building taking place and there's also a conflict that is brewing. But Jesus didn't say, I'm going to go out and clear a spot somewhere. I need to take care of that first. I need to clear a spot. I need to deal with the gates of hell. And when we have that all sorted, then I will build my church. No, he said, I will build my church. And then there's going to be opposition. There's going to be those who oppose that work. And there's going to be a conflict. So I think for this morning, we could say that Grant handled the trowel well and Joshua handled the sword very well. Thank you. We're all called, as believers, we're called to handle both of these weapons. Now, as I go through here this morning, weapons. This is a weapon. This is a tool. We're called to handle both of these. Some of us will do better at this with the sword, and others will do better with the trowel. But I think it's important for us to prioritize and keep before us the idea that Jesus Christ is building his church, and what are we doing to help him in that building process? See, a concern I have is that I have met people who want to be sword users for Jesus. And they really should be picking up the trowel and building what God is building. And sometimes they have the idea that they're going to go out and they're going to defend the gospel. They're going to be out there on the front lines doing this and that for the sake of Jesus. But they find it very difficult to work with their brothers, like we've been talking about the people in Nehemiah, working alongside and building block by block, rock by rock. What good is it to be an excellent swordsman if there's nothing to defend? And I think of the natural or the example today of the soldiers who fight, but they're fighting for the glory of Ukraine, their country. They're not fighting for a cause that has no purpose or no physical place. They're fighting for something. They're defending it. On the other hand, I know people who do a pretty good job of handling the trowel. They're willing and able to work, and they can work at the building of walls. But then you ask them to defend what they're doing. You hand them a sword, and they hardly know what to do with it. Maybe just for an example, if they're asked to explain a reason of the hope that lies within them and do so in meekness and fear, like the Bible says. Instead of having meekness and fear, they have the fear of men. They don't know what to say or do. They don't have a good grasp on defending the gospel. So how long will a beautifully walled city last if there's no one willing to defend it? And I think of the example of, I spent probably over 20 years handling this trowel. I've maybe spent about 20 minutes handling a sword in my lifetime. But I know how protective that masons are with what they have just built. And we should be thinking about the beauty and the glory of what is being built and be protective of that. I have a mason friend who once saw his wall topple over because a bulldozer got too close to it. And that was quite a difficult time for that man. I just want to suggest to us this morning that our primary tool needs to be the trowel. This is a better offensive weapon than the sword. But we're also called to defend, and this is a better defensive weapon than the trowel. I think of what Paul says in Philippians 1. He says, "The things that have happened to me have happened for the furtherance of the gospel." And what he's saying there is that the different circumstances in my life, the difficulties, the trials, some of the things that we read about in our Sunday school this morning, these were building blocks in the building of the kingdom. It was like a trowel in his hand. And these things were made beautiful as they were put into the wall. But then several verses later, in the same chapter, Paul says, "I am appointed for the defense of the gospel." And I don't think, I don't know of anyone who was a better defender of the gospel than Paul. Like, Paul promoted the gospel. He was very good at promoting it, but he was also did very well at defending it. He was good at handling the sword. So the point is, the sword and trowel are both necessary, but they need to be used in the right way. Okay, what are some ways that we use the trowel here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship? And what are some ways that we use the sword here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship? And certainly not on each other, right? I want to come back to those questions at the end, and I'm just going to go over the next 8 things very quickly. I have 4 lessons from Nehemiah 4 in building with the trowel, and 4 lessons in defending with the sword, and I'll probably spend about 30 seconds on each one of those. Building with the trowel, 4 lessons. 1, we see in verse 6, the people were united. It's a uniting lesson. They were united in their purpose, and they had a mind to work. And there's something about working with people who are motivated and who are enthusiastic that is contagious, and I appreciate seeing that here. But they got half the wall built. And because they had a mind to work. Building with the trowel. Another one is strategizing, and we see that in verse 10. There was the rubble that talks about there. The rubbish, the rubble that was a discouragement to the builders. It was like the stuff that had fallen down 140 years earlier when those walls were toppled. And you can imagine the vegetation and the dirt and everything that had grown around those stones over with the passage of the decades since that had happened. It was rubble. It was blocking the way, and it was a place where the enemy could hide and ambush the people. But it is my understanding that it was those very rocks that they dug out and cleaned up and put back into the wall. So God uses the things that could seem like rubble, rubbish, the difficult circumstances of life. He wants us to take those and, with his help, put them into something that is beautiful for his kingdom, for his glory. And he is doing that here among us. Okay, uniting, strategizing, persevering. That we find in verse 15. after they had this threat against them, they went back and started building again. They took up their trowels and started everyone to his work. I wasn't aware when I was preparing this how closely this coincides to our Sunday school. Paul, are you crazy? He went back to that city where they had stoned him. Isn't that amazing? The perseverance. A faithful Christian will keep going back to his work, the work that he's been called to do. And I know there are times when we feel like, I just can't take another day of this. I've given all. I can't give any more. It's quite an example. They went back, everyone, to his work. And then, verse 21, we have the word laboring. So we labored in the work. This was an endeavor that took a lot of commitment. And I know we like our 8-hour days, we like our 5-day weeks. But here they were working from daybreak until the stars appeared. I think that's about 13 or 14 hours a day of manual labor. And then, after that, they were on guard duty at night. There weren't any breaks. In fact, the only time they were able to maybe have a little break is when they were washing their clothes. They kept their clothes on. Guarding with the sword. I have four words here too that go along with the building with the trowel of uniting, strategizing, persevering, and laboring. And these words are praying, preparing, fighting, and rallying. And I have a verse 9 is the verse I want to highlight. This was the first time that Nehemiah got the people together and they prayed in a corporate way. Nehemiah has several prayers that we've looked at before throughout this book, but this is a prayer where they gathered together and we made our prayer to God. We can do more than pray, but we can never do more than pray until we have prayed. So prayer is what we need to do to start with. And I believe prayer is an act of the sword, but it's also an act of building. It's a building act. Preparing, verses 12 and 13. What would you do if someone would come to you 10 times and say you're doing it wrong? Would you start believing them? I think if a wise man would warn you 10 times about something that you're doing or a danger that is ahead, if you continue doing it, you would be called a stubborn person. You'd better take heed. But if a fool would keep coming at you and discouraging you 10 times, the important thing is for us, it's to be steadfast. There's a difference between being stubborn and being steadfast. And here, even though the Jews said they're gonna get you no matter what you do, and they said it over and over and over again, if you tell a lie that's big enough and you keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. But that wasn't true for Nehemiah and his people. Instead of believing it and giving up, they made plans to work against the impending attack. They prepared. He prepared for warfare. And then verse 14, the word fighting. Fighting is not only for ourselves, but look here. They were called to fight for their brothers and their sisters, their sons and their daughters, their wives, and for their houses. It was a work that was not only for themselves. And I think we need to keep that in mind as the people of God here, that what we're doing is a corporate effort that will have a bearing on the lives of other people, including our own families. We fight. We defend because of them. And then the word rally, or rallying, and we find that in verse 20. We rally around the banner of our victorious captain. Our God will fight for us. Christ is captain of the mighty throng. And the mighty throng that the men sang about this morning is not a mighty throng because there's a lot of people and a lot of powerful people. It's a mighty throng because of their leader, because of their captain. Moses told the children of Israel at the Red Sea, he said, the Lord will fight for you and you need to be quiet. Just be silent and see him work. We heard about being silent this morning. Romans 8:31, Paul says, what shall we say to these things? And he talked about the things that were against him. If God is for us, who can be against us? God will fight for us. God has a deeply invested interest in our victory, in our security, because we are the people that he has redeemed. And what I find interesting is in this account, there is not even a mention of a skirmish. There's not even anything more than threat. We don't see any battle. Now we know in real life, sometimes we do experience battles and we face them. We read about battles in the Bible as well. But in this case, it was the resisting the adversary that caused the adversary to flee. We don't even read about any kind of an engagement with them. I think that's amazing. My encouragement to you this morning is from verse 14. Remember the Lord, great and awesome. When you are discouraged in the battle, remember the Lord. When you are tempted, remember the Lord. When you feel misunderstood, remember the Lord. When you are mocked, remember the Lord. When you feel weak, remember the Lord. When you are unappreciated, remember the Lord. When you are upset, remember the Lord. When you are mistreated, remember the Lord. So, what are some examples of using the trowel today here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship? I'd like to hear from you. And then what are some examples of using the sword here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship? And while you're thinking about that, I was reminded of Ephesians 4, verse 11, where Paul tells us that for the good and the upbuilding of the church, God has given to us, on the same team, people who could be naturally competitive with each other. In that list, he mentions prophets, and he also mentions pastors, and there's a few other names in there as well. You think of prophets. Prophets are sword handlers. They're truth people. They tell it how it is. They defend the gospel. Then you have a pastor who is a trowel handler. He's a builder. And how can these two men work together on a team for the glory of God? And I think a pastor, to fulfill his responsibilities right, will need to also sometimes prophesy, and a prophet will need to be pastoral as well. But that gave you enough time to think. What are some ways in which we are called to use the trowel here at church, in our community?
Several times during the day. And there was a builder there, a brick layer, a block layer, whatever.
Thank you.
I think one way is volunteering to help
projects. Okay. Anybody else? Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, he did. Can you say that again, please? That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. At school, we are seeking to build good character and knowledge in the hearts and minds of students. In the process, the teachers also are learning. I see that as construction work.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk about a few sword type of events, not the kind that we use on each other. Remember, this is a spiritual conflict that we're engaged in. One I think of is, and I mentioned it before, but wrestling in prayer. Wrestling in prayer. Any others? Thank you.
I think worship or singing is also a way to defend our position.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Supporting and respecting authority.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's actually something about a sword that is a symbol of authority, isn't it? So, mm-hmm. There's an authority that comes with coming under authority. Okay, well, I hope you have been able to start thinking about this. There's a lot more that I didn't mention this morning, because sermons aren't meant to be the kind of thing where everything is said. But I would like for you to think about how God wants to glorify himself with his people. And he wants to do that here at Dunmore East Christian Fellowship. And one example, we're looking at our statement of faith and practice. We handed out some questionnaires a month or so ago, and some of you church members responded to that. And if we miss someone, let us know, because we would like for as many as wish to participate be a part of that. But is our statement of faith and practice, is that an effort of the use of the trowel or an effort of the use of the sword? I'd be interested in what your perspective is. Again, I would say both, because it talks about how our building will be defended. We won't do this, we won't do that, because it's dangerous, and we'll keep those dangers at bay. But I think we sometimes tend to view our statement of faith and practice maybe too much as being a defensive effort. And I think we need to view it more in ways that, in the light of how it will help us develop practices that build the church, how the church will be built, some things that we see valuable in being faithful. So as we work through this over the course of the next number of months as a church, let's be builders. Let's work together after the example that we have from the book of Nehemiah. We're called to rise and build, and a lot has been accomplished over the years here at church. Many have joined the work and have built well. Are there still breaches in the wall? Yes. Are there still stones lying in heaps? Yes. Are there parts of the wall here that are only half high and still need to be built to higher levels, certainly. So let's rise and build with the trowels that God has given us and make sure that we defend what he has given us with the sword that he provides for us. May God richly bless you.